So in the mornings, we'll give fairly standard instructions on insight meditation. And that instruction is progressive, so we'll start with the breath the first day, and it's often a very good way to begin, to just keep it really, really simple and stay meditating the breath. And then we'll expand it out to the body, to emotions, to thoughts, progressively over these first 4 days. And they build on each other in a nice way, so you probably come along. And those instructions will be given in the morning at 8:30. The Dharma talks at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and the theme for the talks is a Pali word is adhitana, and it's usually translated into English as resolve or determination. And the Buddha has one place where he taught 4 adhitanas, 4 resolves. And we thought that this would be a good kind of thread to run through the talks, and kind of something that ties the Dharma talks together through the retreat. So what I want to say a few words about resolve, and then specifically about the 4 resolves that the Buddha talked about. So one of the reasons I like the English word resolve is because it has the word solve in it. And solve comes from the same root as the English word solution, and has the same double meaning. A solution is the answer to a problem, but a solution is also a liquid that you put something into solution. And the Latin word, the root, means to untie, to loosen. And so when you resolve something, it can sound like determination, like you're going to bear down and get really serious now. This is going to be the tough retreat. Nikki and Gil are going to talk about resolve. But built into this word in English, in my mind, is that it's also about releasing, dissolving, letting go, untying as part of it. So the question is, how can we have a resolve, a kind of a determination, that has built into it not stress, not straining, but supports us in becoming free? And to bring those two together, so there is a kind of commitment, or a kind of dedication, or a devotion, or a determination to, resolve, to really be engaged, to be committed, to be wholeheartedly here, but to do it in such a way that it begins to free us. It's kind of like being completely determined to be relaxed. Rather than seeing it as an oxymoron, it doesn't work, it means that you're kind of, in an ongoing way, paying attention, noticing much as you can how to stay relaxed, and really be committed to that. And you're determined to do that, then the results are that you get relaxed. So how do you practice in a way with resolve, where the very way that we practice is both determined and helps us to begin to let go or free up or open up in a way that's effective? The Pali word, adhitana, the adi part can mean higher. So often this context can be like the higher something, the higher level of something. And tana means something like to stand, the ground upon which we stand, the basis for something, to stand on something, to take a stand. And it gives a different feeling than the feeling of dissolving, but here it's kind of a firmness, being grounded, being really here in a determined, clear way. And so, practice is supported by resolve. Any intention we have can be supported by resolve, because resolve, it's easy to have intentions. Resolves are what allow us to follow through on the intention. That extra step, intention can just be wishful thinking. But it's one thing to have an intention, the other thing is to follow through on it. And with mindfulness practice, meditation practice like this, we want to follow through with it with as much continuity as we can. Kind of put ourselves into it and just stay connected. And that's part of the art of this kind of retreat practice, is kind of, it's like full immersion. Just kind of put yourself into the practice as fully immersively as you can. To do that, you have to have a certain resolve or dedication or devotion or commitment to really stay in it. And so, but how to do it in a way that you don't feel tight is part of the art. And so there's the resolve. It can be an abstract thing. It has to do with how we're engaged. We're engaged with dedication. I'm resolved. But also in English, we often talked about being resolved on something. Or in this word, adhitana, there's something we take a stand on, that we're basing ourselves on. And so the Buddha talked about four resolves. And these are really good places to take your stand, to stand on, to be supported by, are really good things to be resolved on. Because there's many things you can be resolved on, but these are the really, really healthy things if you're interested in the path of freedom that this practice was designed for. So here are the four resolves. Wisdom, truth, and then I'll give the Pali word first, chaga. And the fourth one is peace. And the reason why I gave you the third one, the Pali word, is that the word chaga has two meanings, and that they're closely related. It can mean relinquishment, like kind of like letting go, giving something up. And it could also mean generosity. And it makes some sense. You know, you relinquish something, you can also, that relinquishment can be an act of generosity. Here, have this, I relinquish it. And so it depends on the context which one of those is used. So what we're going to do for this retreat is we're going to take these four resolves and turn them into five resolves. So we have five talks, the first five talks. Talk tomorrow will be about wisdom, then on truth, then on relinquishment, then peace, and then we'll get to generosity on Friday. And it's kind of interesting that it's kind of upside down, because generally Buddhist lists that include generosity have it first, and wisdom comes last. But in this one, wisdom comes first, and generosity less. So maybe we'll discover how that's wise as we explore this together. And so we'll use that as a thread, or the common themes through this retreat, these resolves, as we offer teachings that are hopefully supportive for you here on the retreat and maybe outside of the retreat as well. And in the process of doing that, maybe you'll be reflecting a little bit about your relationship to the idea of intention, to resolve, to determination, you know, how you give yourself to what you do. What's the nature of that engagement, that offering yourself to your activity, to the practice? And can it be supported by resolve, by determination? And I would say that for myself, that I've been meditating for over 40 years, so I think I have some little modicum of self-understanding about how meditation works for me. And I can say with some confidence that I don't have native easy capacity to get for concentration. It's just like I wasn't born that way somehow. However, what I have is I have resolve. And so I set my mind on something, and I'll stay persistent and stay with it and engaged in it. And in the wake of this resolve and persistent, I get concentrated. But it's a byproduct of this resolve, the engagement I have. Many people associate meditation with getting concentrated, And maybe some of you are like me, with concentration is not, you know, how my mind is made up to be. So, but maybe it's the resolve is a support for you, and maybe you'll get concentrated with the support of resolve and determination. Or perhaps there's something that you find that you are really committed to, something that you want to base your life on. You want to be grounded and established on some values. And maybe the values of truth, or wisdom, or letting go, or peace, or love, or compassion, or service to the world. And is there some way that the quality of resolve, dissolving resolve, can support you to be more to follow through more on what you want to base your life on, what you want to stand, where you want to take a stand in this world? So perhaps as we go through these themes, that could be kind of working in the background for you and your relationship with this and your understanding of it, and how this may be this quality. Maybe there's ways you'll discover how this quality can be seen in a new light and maybe support you in your life and in important ways. So that's the plan for this retreat. So
thank you, Gil, for laying out the plan for the week and sharing that. And for my part, I wanted to say how excited I am to be exploring this theme with you this coming week. And as Gil was talking about the four resolves and aditana, the word in Pali, and the two parts of it, the higher ground and standing, this image of being uplifted, when you stand up for something, when you're inspired, when there's an inspiration from the heart, you're lifted. So it's not kind of like standing like this, but it's like, oh, the whole body just stands up. So the image that came up for me was not one of standing up for something with a lot of tensing your muscles, because that would exhaust you very soon, very quickly. But just standing with ease, with gentleness, but being uplifted from your heart, being uplifted, because these qualities are so beautiful to inspire and aspire to. So, yeah, so gentleness, just as we explore these resolves. So I'd like to move us to the formal initiation of entering the retreat space. And for those of you who are new, and actually those of you who have done retreats before, by the way, is the volume okay? Can you hear me? Is there anyone who is having trouble hearing me? Is it too soft for anyone? Don't be shy. Okay. My voice too tends to get soft. So for those of you who are new to retreat or not, the formal initiation and entering what I like to think of as the sacred retreat space. I mean, your life is sacred, but there's something special, I think, about practicing on retreat. And that formal initiation, as Gail talked about this afternoon in the opening circle, is taking the refuges and precepts. And those who are new say, what's that? What's up with these refuges and precepts? I will explain them. Basically, as a formal entry to retreat, the refuges are really kind of reclaiming in our hearts the sense of honoring and safety, and finding home. Traditionally in three things, in the triple jewel, the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. I will talk about them because, you know, they may sound heady, well, Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, but actually, how do you relate to them? How do we relate to them? The Buddha, you can relate to as the historical figure, someone who attained, became awakened, and also you can relate to it as, oh, the possibility in your own heart, this possibility of awakening, of freedom, of ease, of kindness, of joy, this possibility, human possibility in your heart, and finding home, finding refuge, and that possibility that yes, me too, I too can wake up in this very life. So taking refuge in that possibility, finding home, finding sense of homeness, wholeness in that possibility, taking refuge in the Buddha. And then taking refuge in the Dharma is trusting Dharma with the capital D, which is the teachings of the Buddha. These teachings are beautiful. They're amazing. They're liberating. They're wow. Just wow. One can be speechless when studying and reading and practicing how mind and heart opening these teachings are. So trusting in that. Wow. This amazing recipe. More than 2,600 years old. Putting our trust in that, and also Dharma with small d, taking refuge in the way things are. That's another way Dharma, the word, is translated. So taking, finding, trusting the process, trusting that it will all unfold just as it should in this body, in this mind, that everything you need to wake up is right here in this body and mind, will be presented to you on your retreat. Even it might seem like a mind storm, but if you sit with it, it's exactly what you need. Trust the process, trust the schedule, trust the process, trust everything. It will work out exactly as it needs to, especially if you're new on retreat. So trusting, taking refuge in the Dharma, in the way things are. Again, as I talk about these triple gems and finding trust in them, see how you relate to it, how it makes sense for you, because it's your practice and we're all unique in different ways. So find the way you relate to it. And the last one, refuge, finding refuge, taking refuge in the Sangha. So Sangha, the word Sangha, also can be interpreted in different ways. One is the classical interpretation of monks and nuns and practitioners, generations of practitioners that have come before us, that have passed down these practices that now we've inherited. What a beautiful inheritance to really letting our hearts be lit by that. And Sangha is people here who are sitting with you, walking with you, eating with you, supporting you, taking refuge and safety, finding safety and practicing together. This would have been a very different retreat if you were the only person in this room. Imagine. But as those of you who've sat retreats, you know the power of Sangha, taking refuge in the Sangha, in the support of like-minded individuals in this room and elsewhere in the world, not just in the time, but also in the space dimension. All the practitioners in the world who've come before you are in the world at the same time and after you. So taking refuge, finding home, feeling at home in the Sangha. So let's take the refuges together in Pali, and then I'll talk about the precepts and we'll take them together in English, actually. So maybe I'll do it call and response. And also, if you like to, you can put your hands in the heart center, bringing them together. You don't have to. And just also, for those of you who are new, just to say one more word before we start, you'll also see us perhaps bowing. And again, find your own relationship to that. For me, when I bow, it's an expression of gratitude to everything that has brought me to this point and everything that is here, all the things, everything just as it is. So for me, it's just an upspring of gratitude. For other people, it's different things. See what your relationship is to bowing, if you choose to do that, or if you or bringing your hands to your to the center of your chest. Also, it could be construed as being all your intentionality when the two hands come together. Ah, bringing your wholeness, your intention together, and really expressing that physically in a gesture. So, if you like to do that, let's do the refuges, chant the refuges together, and call in response. Namo tassa. Bhagavato,
Bhagavato,
Arahato,
Arahato,
Samma Sambuddhasa,
Samma Sambuddhasa,
Namo Tassa, Bhagavato,
Bhagavato,
Arahato,
Arahato,
Samma Sambuddhasa, Namo tassa,
Bhagavato,
Arahato,
Samma
Sambuddhasa,
Buddhang Saranang Gacchami,
Dhammang Saranang Gacchami, Sangang Saranang Gacchami,
Sangang Saranang Gacchami,
Dutiyampi,
Dutiyampi,
Buddhang Saranang Gacchami,
Buddhang Saranang Gacchami,
Dutiyampi,
Dutiyampi,
Dhammam Saranang Gacchami, Dutiyampi, Dhammam Sangham Saranam Gacchami,
Sangham Saranam Gacchami,
Tatiyampi,
Tatiyampi,
Buddhang Saranam Gacchami,
Buddhang Saranam Gacchami,
Tatiyampi, Dhammam Saranam Gacchami, Tatiyampi, Sangham Saranam Gacchami,
Sangham Saranam Gacchami.
Now for the precepts. So precepts, we take the five precepts together as we enter into the retreat. And the way I like to think of them, just that they're just different versions of non-harming, of taking a vow of not harming ourselves and not harming others, basically offering safety first and foremost to ourselves, actually, and then offering safety to others so that we can all relax and just practice together. So the five precepts. The first one is not to take life, not to kill, which seems like a pretty simple way of not harming, not harming not just other human beings, of course, but respecting life, respecting even life forms that might scare you, little spiders and little life forms that you may find unpleasant, but respecting them, respecting their lives, literally respecting all forms of life. And it can be a beautiful practice. When I started this practice, I did not have a very friendly relationship to bugs. And starting on retreat, I found myself, I had taken the five precepts, I had to carry them out. And it became a practice. It became a beautiful practice of just respecting life. Their life is sweet to them, just as it is yours to you, respecting life in any form. So the second precept, not taking what has not been offered. So stealing is one form of that, but actually, if you consider it, not taking what has not been offered is a higher bar than stealing. It's a higher bar. It means not taking anything that's not offered to you, any piece of information that's not offered to you. You know, if a note is lying there and it's not written to you, it's, you know, reading it's taking what has not been offered. So really, there's so many different ways that that can be practiced with. You know, if somebody's attention or time is not offered to you to taking it. So there's so many ways that we can practice with that, both on and off retreat. The third precept has to do with our sexual energy. And sexuality, as beautiful as it can be in daily life, in the right way, on retreat, we take a vow of celibacy, to protect both ourselves and also to others, and also others from our sexual energy. And it can become a practice to work with. And sexual energy, if it arises, it will arise and pass away. And it can be something that you can just watch and work with. And not express by trying to make contact with others, etc. And also really respecting how your own energy on retreat could be better used in different ways. So the third precept about sexual energy can also be a way of really practicing with intention and energies. The fourth precept has to do with truth, speaking the truth, and actually not lying and not speaking harmfully and harshly, which on retreat, it becomes noble silence. So this is where we take the vow of noble silence. And it's not a silencing, it's actually giving both ourselves a space, our minds and hearts to settle, and also giving each other really the space that each of us needs. And it particularly becomes important for those of you who are here with people you know, perhaps a good friend or a partner, to really respect their space and give them that safety of being experiencing whatever they're experiencing, and from afar sending them loving kindness and metta, but really giving them the safety of being in whatever space they are, offering that safety through not speech, the noble silence, and also communication. It's both offering them safety and the whole container of the retreat. The last one, the fifth precept, has to do with not taking intoxicants that cloud the mind. As you might have figured out by now, in this practice, clarity of mind is tantamount. It's really important to have a clear mind to see things as they arise and pass away. And taking intoxicants to the point of heedlessness, it can really cloud the mind. You can't see clearly anymore. So on retreat, we refrain from any recreational drugs. But if you have prescription drugs, please continue to take them. Please continue to take your medications. This is not a time to experiment. So again, the five precepts are different aspects, different dimensions of not harming ourselves, not harming others, really offering safety. And the aspect of not harming ourselves, there is this idea, there is this actually, this experience of the bliss of blamelessness. So when one lives, when one feels that one's conduct is in accord with integrity, then, you know, when you go to put your head down on your pillow at night, there's an ease, and you won't have thoughts of, oh, I shouldn't have done that, oh, I shouldn't have said that, oh, I shouldn't have taken that. There's just a sense of ease. So you're offering yourself safety, you're offering yourself joy, you're offering your mind safety by adhering and taking the precepts. And of course, it allows everyone to just relax and exhale knowing that, for example, if you leave something, even if you leave your wallet around, actually there was a case of someone lost their wallet and it had been sitting on the lap of the Kuan Yin statue for, I think, a couple of days downstairs on a previous retreat. So there is that sense of safety. Like, no one will take what is not theirs. So with that, we will take the refuges, the precepts together. And again, we'll do this in call and response. And I like to offer it in English so that you know what you're saying. And again, find your own relationship to them. And these, one last thing before we get to them, is that these precepts, they are like a scaffold that help our inner journey, our inner practice. And they're not a should. And if you find yourself on any of them, failing on any of them, it's a training. We take them on as a training. So you fail, for example, with noble silence in some way in your yogi job, you know, there's some chatter, and then, okay, you take the precept on again. And there's no, there's no concept of sin, of course. You just, you know, it's a training. You take it on as a training. You take it on as a training again and again and again if needed. So with that, for the sake of our training together,
I undertake the precept
to refrain from taking life.
For the sake of our training together,
I undertake the precept
to refrain from
taking what has not been offered.
For the sake of our training together,
I undertake the precept
to refrain from
hurtful and,
false and harmful speech.
For the sake of our training together,
I undertake the precept
to refrain from
using my sexual energy in ways that are harmful.
For the sake of our training together,
I undertake the precept
to refrain from
taking intoxicants that cloud the mind.
So now we have been initiated in the retreat space. And we'll just sit together for 5 minutes or so before ending our evening together.